Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
$85 billion spent on the Afghan military, training them, supplying them, and yet this army seemed to fold in a hurry, at least according to President Biden on Monday.
We trained and equipped an Afghan military force of some 300,000 strong, incredibly well equipped, a force larger in size than the militaries of many of our NATO allies. We gave them every tool they could need.
But should the Pentagon have been so surprised? Washington Post investigative reporter Craig Whitlock writes that leaders long had doubts. And Craig, you have a new book coming out, The Afghanistan Papers, where you chronicle 20 years of doubts of Americans in Afghanistan, talking about American missteps in Afghanistan. Is there recent evidence here that the Pentagon was nervous about the Afghan army?
Oh, yes, no question. The Pentagon's been very nervous about the Afghan army. I mean, even Joe Biden, when he announced the withdrawal of U.S. troops back in April, saying that he wanted them all out by the end of August, U.S. intelligence agencies were then estimating that the Afghan government might only last for 6 months, maybe a year. And as we got closer to the summer, those estimates kept getting more and more pessimistic. But I don't think they had any inkling that the Afghan security forces would collapse as quickly as they did. But I think that gets to a larger problem where, you know, our intelligence assessments of Afghanistan, of how their government worked and their security forces weren't that great. We just didn't see the rot, the extent of the problem there.
I do want to ask you about these larger questions. But first of all, as they say, the enemy gets a vote here. What do we know about the Taliban, how they elbowed their way back into the frame so quickly, using their ability to persuade, as it were?
Yeah, and that's a really good question, Scott, and one that I don't think has gotten enough attention. Everybody's focused on how quickly the Afghan government and their army and police collapsed. But the Taliban, you can't help but be impressed by the way they set this out. They were very strategic, very patient. Once they cut a deal with the Trump administration back in February 2020, at that point, the Taliban knew the Americans were leaving. So part of the agreement was that they wouldn't launch any more attacks on U.S. troops, and they didn't for the most part. But they were laying low, preparing for the day when the Americans would finally pull out. And then they would very quickly, province by province, city by city, put their plans in place to try and take things over. Now, there is a history, a tradition in Afghanistan where local commanders or militias will change sides if they sense that the winds of change are blowing, if they want to be on the winning side,
sure,
right? And they can live and fight for another day. So the Taliban, of course, knew this and had been in secret negotiations with a lot of local commanders, unit commanders, to say, look, the Americans are going. We'll give you safe passage. We won't kill you. Mm. Or in some cases, maybe we'll give you money if you flip sides, and we'll do it without a fight. That was a recipe that proved pretty successful.
Yeah, and this goes to, of course, the Taliban's cultural understanding of their home space, home territory. But as far as the Americans, you mentioned this broader problem, this broader rot here. Over 20 years, I mean, fundamentally, what are some of the things culturally that the Americans, you think, got wrong that really factor into this army collapse?
So the United States knew it needed a proxy force in Afghanistan, that the only way we could leave Afghanistan is if we knew there was an army or police force that could support the Afghan government that, frankly, we had put in place and we had tried to prop up. So for 20 years, we've been trying to train and equip an Afghan army and an Afghan police force. It's important to understand when I say police in Afghanistan, they aren't like cops in America on the beat. These are paramilitary police who are well-armed and are meant to hold territory, and they get into combat just like the army does. But the problem was we didn't have a capacity to train an army or a police force, at least not a big one, from scratch. So we did what we knew how to do, is we fashioned it on how the Defense Department in the United States works. That just wasn't how the Afghans do things, but we kept trying to, you know, force this square peg into a round hole, as it were.
And as you write, this American copy and paste approach was in this place where there are fundamental literacy problems and so many other cultural barriers here. I mean, does this fall into the category of American hubris, you think?
Yeah, no question. Hubris is exactly the right word. So, you know, the U.S. military knew from the beginning that, you know, this was a difficult batch of recruits. You know, in Afghanistan, particularly during the first decade of the war, the literacy rate is just really low. So more than 90% of the recruits coming into the Afghan army couldn't read, couldn't write. Not only that, many of them couldn't count. They didn't know their colors. So imagine trying to train people like that in very short order how to handle complicated weaponry or communications when you don't even know how to communicate with them and they can't read or write. It's just very difficult. But the hubris was we thought we could fix it, right? So we tried to teach them how to read and write in crash courses. We kept putting people through this recruiting system, trying to fix it, because, you know, that's kind of the can-do spirit of the U.S. military. They don't want to admit that there's an unsolvable problem. So we kept trying to make it work, but I think it was just a bridge too far.
Well, Craig Whitlock, we're going to get to talk to you more about this in a couple of weeks when your book comes out, The Afghanistan Papers. Craig Whitlock is an investigative reporter at The Washington Post. Thanks for the time.
You bet. Thanks for having me.